south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, first off, today I was asked to mention once again that strange relationship between coconuts and dogs. Now, I don't know if you remember, I hardly remember, but a long time ago on this show, I mentioned that dogs absolutely love raw coconuts. Now, I'm not talking about the coconut water or the coconut oil. Sure, they'll eat that stuff too, but they're absolutely nuts about the hard white coconut meat. Now, you know, down here in Latin America, many expats have big pieces of property. If not, at least they have a garden. Because really, that's one of the joys of living in Latin America. If you don't have a garden or some kind of green space, you're nuts. You don't need a green thumb, you just stick a twig in the ground and it grows. No lie. Anyway, since most of us expats have gardens or pretty big yards, it's not a bad thing at all. In fact, it's pretty cool to have a big dog. Now, I gotta tell you, for years I've been buying coconuts for the coconut water. In fact, everywhere you go down here, there's little guys with wheelbarrows and corner carts selling coconuts, and they'll chop it right there for you, fresh as can be, and they'll stick a straw in and you can suck down the coconut water right then and there if you like. However, I don't recommend you take that straw the guy gives you and use it. Bring your own straw. Why? Well, all you got to do is look where he's pulling that straw from, and you'll know what I mean. They're not, I repeat, not individually wrapped like when you get them from a restaurant, for example. Which is, by the way, why I generally have some straws in the glove compartment of my car. Johnny on the spot, huh? So anyway, you could drink it on the spot, or you have them cut the coconut until you can just see the white meat, meaning it's not perforated yet. Then you take it home and put it in a cool, dry place. Then you got about a week to tap into it, and it's still absolutely fresh. Anyway, for years, I was just buying those coconuts for like 50 cents each or less. In fact, if you're anywhere near the coast in Latin America, and most people are, you can even get coconuts as cheap as 10 cents a piece. Anyway, the trick is to never just buy them whole because it's so much work to tap into them. You have to buy them with the husk partially sliced off, yet without being perforated. So anyway, for years I've been buying them off and on for the coconut water, and that was it. Because, you know, as for the white coconut meat itself, I'm really not big on it. Even as a kid, things with shredded coconut in them never really turned me on. Like coconut cookies or Mounds bars, remember those? Yum, yum, right? Well, for me, yuck. Anyway, maybe it was a year and a half ago when I had a visitor at my place. Now, after we had some coconut water, she went outside, unbeknownst to me, and slammed those two coconuts on the cement and cracked them in half. She then took a spoon and scraped out the kind of gelatinous coating that clings to the white meat in some coconuts. Can't eat it myself. Looks too much like snot to me. Sorry about that. Hope you're not having dinner right now. Or a Mounds bar. Anyway, later that night, I noticed where the dogs sleep and where they hang when it's raining, on the floor beside them were the two split coconut husks. Completely hollowed out, no white meat left in the shells at all. But I also note it must have been a hell of a lot of work for them to scrape that stuff out with their teeth because there were dozens of deep teeth marks and lines on the husk where the white meat used to be. Obviously, no matter how long it took those dogs to scrape that stuff out and eat it, to them it was worth it. In fact, all that next day or two, those husks became their toys. Little by little, they just kept on tearing at them and playing with them until they were shredded all over the place. So, if you try that trick and give your dog a split coconut, be sure to collect the pieces after a day or so, or you'll have shards of it all over the yard and possibly in your house. Anyway, after that happened, every time I bought coconuts, I did the same thing. I would break them in half and let the dogs have at it. Then, a funny thing happened about 4 months later when I took my two dogs to the vet. The vet was puzzled and said to me, "I can't believe how clean your dog's teeth are. Last time I saw him, what was it, a year ago? I had to really go after that tartar, and believe me, it wasn't a pleasant experience for me or the dogs. What have you been feeding them? Or, better yet, what have they been chewing on?" So naturally, I told her about the coconut trick. Now, all the while I assumed, well, here's a vet and she's been treating dogs all her life, and this is the land of the coconuts, so How come she didn't know that? And when I joked with her about her lack of coconut dog dental hygiene knowledge, she just laughed and said, you know, that's a very good idea. But unfortunately, it'll never catch on down here. Then I said, of course, why not? Look at the results. And she said, you know, people down here buy coconuts, drink the water, and scrape out every last shred of the white coconut meat for themselves. Not to mention, they just love that gelatinous coating inside that reminds me of you-know-what. Then she said, they're not going to give that to the dogs. Coconuts are a 3-for-1 food treat for humans, not dogs. Then I nodded and said, okay, I get it. Anyway, to the emailer that wanted me to explain about that coconut thing and dogs, he also stated in his email that it was pretty much financially impossible for him to do that up in New York, where he comes from, because coconuts are way too expensive to give to a dog. $3 to $5, depending where you get them. Anyway, all you expat gonna-bees and wannabes, if you come down here and have a dog, and, like me, are hot on the idea of feeding them the raw coconut husk, no problem at all when they're 10, 20, 30, even 50 cents a piece. However, note that with small dogs, 40 pounds or under, let's say, as much as they love that coconut meat too, and as much as they try, they're never going to be able to scrape more than 10 or 20% of it out of there, only around the edges, because they can't maneuver around the inside curve. They have the teeth all right, but the jaw just doesn't open wide enough to get a good grasp or purchase point on it. No matter, they too will use it as a toy all day long, and they'll rip it to shreds as best they can. However, they'll never clean out that white meat down to the dry husk like a big dog will. So there's a bit of news for all you dog lovers out there. And here's another animal-related story. In regards to the fresh gringa expat that just moved down to Panama, in a phone consultation with me, she had a couple of animal experiences she really didn't appreciate. And by the way, I do give phone consultations. Just go to the expatwisdom.com website and check it out for yourself. We can talk for an hour or a half an hour and discuss anything you need to know about coming down to Latin America yourself and whatnot. Anyway, in a phone conversation just the other day, she told me how disgusted she was when she rented a furnished studio apartment in Panama City in one of the residential towers. She says the place was practically new, only had one renter before, looked clean enough when she got in there, and as it turned out, the very first night she stayed there, she got up about midnight to get a snack out of the fridge, and lo and behold, there were cockroaches everywhere. She said, living in the refrigerator, in the stove, in the microwave, and in the dishwasher. Now, during the day, she said, never saw one. And yes, she did hear my show a long time ago about the cucaracha or cockroach cure, which really, really works. And that recipe goes like this. You take an empty soup bowl. You put a level teaspoon of flour in it. Then you add a level teaspoon of borax. You can buy that in hardware stores, and you can get it at welding supply stores because borax is used as a flux. It's powdered white. Then you add a pinch of brown sugar. Take an eyedropper full of water and start adding water a drop at a time and knead it with your fingers until it's about the consistency of cookie batter. Then you proceed with your fingers, it's no problem, it won't hurt you, and make little balls about a quarter inch in diameter. You should be able to get 10 or 20 balls out of a mixture like that. Then you start placing them unobtrusively around the kitchen. Best places being in corners and where walls meet floors, since cockroaches like to run along the wall and the floor edge. Then stick one little ball behind each leg of your microwave oven, because that's how the cockroaches get in there. They somehow have to climb up one of those rubber leg mounts to find a way in. And as for your stove, you can stick a couple of those in the corners of your oven. Of course, you don't want to do any baking with those things in there. Not that they'll damage anything or do any harm. It's just that you'll kill their effectiveness after they crisp out. Hey, now here's an idea. Why not make the bait look like golf balls and put them around the White House? So anyway, once you've made these little quarter-inch balls, they'll be a little tacky like cookie dough. So they'll stick pretty much anywhere you put them. Now, after a couple of days, they'll seem to dry out kind of hard like a cookie. No matter. Those things will still remain appealing to local cockroaches for up to 3 months. But don't expect miracles if you haven't thoroughly cleaned out your microwave and your oven and your closets and all that before you do this. Now, you know what kind of slob you are. but you never really know what kind of slob the last tenant was. However, if he or she was Latin, expect the worst. That said, here's my ironclad guarantee. I'll bet you all the coconuts you can carry that every single Latin family has a cockroach problem, and they don't complain about it, they don't even mind. To them, it's part of life, and they live with it. In fact, I've yet to be in a Latin kitchen where I couldn't find in 2 or 3 minutes about 10 different places the cockroaches will be feeding at night. The sinks, the refrigerators, the microwaves are just loaded with gunk. Dishes left overnight in the sink, pots and pans with soups and beans and rice left on the stove overnight. All that stuff the cucarachas just feast on every night. And to think, that's how some years ago Tupperware made millions down here by promising that if you sealed up your food with their products, you could achieve the impossible, do what no Latin man or woman has ever done before, live a life without cucarachas. However, as you know, after a month or so, all you've got are mismatched lids. Seems there's a Tupperware black hole in every kitchen. I know, it's those cockroaches. They're in on it, right? Anyway, that's why I think every time I get invited over to dinner at a Latin person's house, I end up with a stomachache. I don't know if it's the flies or the cucarachas or just the thought of the flies and the cucarachas that does it. Oh, and about those flies. I'm telling you, you just can't go to someone's house or go to a party where flies aren't absolutely everywhere, landing on all your food and glasses, etc. No one ever seems to protect or cover the serving dishes. And that's why it always drives me nuts when I walk into a bakery or a cake shop and I look into the display window with all the goods laid out and the flies are just walking around, looking at me and giving me the finger. Well, anyway, they would if they had fingers. Now, here's an observation. I wonder if you've ever had it. I doubt it. Now, I've noticed in those bakery display windows, when there are flies, there are never bees. And when there are bees, there are never flies. You say, what? Bees? What you talking about, Johnny? Well, I'll tell you, it's very common to go into a bakery or a cake shop, and you'll see a few honeybees buzzing around in the display case. Now, as for me, I'm not bothered. Because, you know, if you eat honey, it's pretty much the same thing, right? And the owners and the workers at those bakeries and pastry shops, they don't seem to be bothered one bit about flies or bees. Until the irritable gringo, that's me, brings it up. It's not like I'm on the attack. I try to make a joke of it. I say, that cheesecake there, 20 pesos a slice, is that with or without the flies? To which the lady usually laughs and goes along with the joke. And by the way, once I said that about a piece of cake and there were bees hovering around, no flies as usual, and I said the same thing, is that with or without the bees? And you know what she said? She said, oh no, the bees stay here. They're very good luck. And that wasn't the only time I heard that. Here's a tip for you. I don't recommend at all that you buy day-old bakery. Don't do it. Why? Because you'll be eating more than day-old pastry, I'll tell you that. What I mean is every night at every bakery, it's some cockroach's quinceañeros party. So that day-old stuff is likely sprinkled with cockroach sh**. Then again, Grandma always said, eat a pound of dirt a year. Don't you wish it was just dirt? That said, let's change gears with an email from Robert. He says, Don Johnny, I was just watching a video of some street scenes in Cuba, and it occurs to me that once trade is normalized, classic collectors are going to come down and scoop up all those 1960s cars. Okay, Robert, thanks for that. I get your point, but I think you mean 1940s and 50s cars, because the Cuban Revolution was in 59, and that's when car importation from the U.S. stopped. Well, I know in a past show I talked about Cuban cars, but just to repeat, if I didn't say this already, I know for a fact no one's really going to be able to make money off those Cuban classic cars because even if you could get them out of the country free, without taxes or import duties, whatever, you'll find that although a lot of those cars look cherry, they look really nice, on closer inspection, and believe me, I've been to Cuba twice and I've seen these cars, the real problem is, for 56 years, that's 56 years, there have been no original replacement parts available, and cars have a way of deteriorating rapidly and twice as fast in Latin America. So, the only way Cubans who own those vehicles could keep them running and on the road was to fabricate in their own makeshift machine shops the necessary basic spare parts when cars broke down. So I'm telling you, on the outside they may look good, but as soon as you open the hood or look in the driver's seat, you'll see dozens upon dozens of odd parts that don't quite fit. Sure, they do the job, but they don't quite look right or match. Yep, old Rube Goldberg would be proud of Cuban creativity, but non-standard parts like that really destroy the value of a classic car. Which means if you were able to ship one of these cars to the States, the cost of restoring it with original replacement parts would kill you. But if you were to find a very rare model type, things would be quite different. Let's say, for example, a 1953 through 1956 Packard Custom Caribbean. With that word Caribbean, you gotta know some of them ended up in Cuba. Now, they only made less than 500 of these cars a year. And I'm sure there's probably one around Cuba somewhere. If you can find it, no matter what condition it's in, or how many bastardized parts they put into it, it would be worth bringing back, believe me. The last restored one at auction went for about $165,000. So as far as just going down and picking up some old Chevys and Pontiacs and stuff, well, for 95% of the cars you see chugging down a Havana Boulevard, it's a losing proposition. Sure, you can buy yourself a nice 1954 Chevy and bring it back to the States. Just remember, you'll have to replace about 50% of what's under the hood and complete interior and upholstery. You're looking at one hefty restoration bill at a cost of about 10 to 15 grand. Okay, so what? Maybe it is worth it. Well, check the net and you see you can buy completely restored 54 Chevys for from 12,000 to 20,000 bucks. So what do you get out of it? Unless you're a car freak and it's a labor of love. Remember, you got to buy the car too and ship it. Pay the taxes, the duties, the insurance, etc. Unless, of course, you happen to be a Cuban-American into nostalgia and it reminds you of the old pre-Castro glory days or something. Now, if you've got a couple of months to spare, you can go down to Cuba because they've relaxed the traveling restrictions and search for the odd rare one. Now, there's a one-of-a-kind adventure, huh? But if you really don't know anything about cars, forget about it. Unless, of course, you brought down your own car nut slash mechanic. Anyway, thanks, Bob, for the email. I hope I didn't throw too much dirt in your carburetor. I'm sure there are some gringos out there finagling ways to make money on those old cars, but right now, the numbers just don't work. That said, get a load of this email. This one comes from Jack Brett, one of my Expat Wisdom Seminar alumni. And speaking of Expat Wisdom Seminars, remember, I'm planning on having one, I think, in the second week of July 2015. So if you're interested, send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. I should have all the details in a week or two, and I know some of you will want to get in on the early bird discounts. So do send me that email and start making those plans. And by the way, people have asked me about group sizes, and with all the seminars so far, the groups have ranged from about 12 people to 30 people. So it really is a personalized hand-holding affair. Anyway, we'll be roving around Central America again, so there'll be a lot of boots on the ground. Enough said about that. Back to Jack Brett's email. Again, we'll paraphrase this a bit. It's pretty long. Hey, Johnny. Caught your show on Colombian-cocaína, that's cocaine fashion, the other day. It reminded me of a book in Spanish I picked up in Chela, Guatemala, which is basically about the same topic. That is, Colombian drug lords and their voluptuous tastes. The title of the book is Sin Tetas, No Hay Paraíso. And I guess you don't need a translation for that, right? All right, let's stop there a minute. It's me again. And you probably do need a translation. Like Jack said, the book is called Sin tetas no hay paraíso, which means without tits, there is no paradise. I'm not kidding you, this is the exact English translation. Now, come on, bear with me a little bit because this gets interesting, believe me. And it's not porn, so don't jump to conclusions here. Anyway, Jack continues. Johnny, you know, I haven't gotten around to reading past the first few pages, but it looks like it's the classic Colombiana, Colombian girl, rags-to-riches story, with, by the sound of it, a not-so-happy ending. In a nutshell, Colombian barrio girl, meaning low-class neighborhood girl, meets rich cocaine cowboy. The way it plays out, she's willing to do anything to hang with the rich cocaine cowboy culture, but finds out from her better endowed friend that a cocaine cowboy stood her up because she lacks tetas. Don't have to spell that out, right? Anyway, presumably, she remedies that little problem in later chapters with cirugía plástica, that's plastic surgery, and has a rollicking good time, for a while anyway, until the convolutions of the cocaine culture take their toll. Anyway, Johnny, I found out this book was pretty popular in Colombia. In fact, they made it into a movie and a hit television series in Spanish, of course. Go ahead, look up the Wikipedia entry for it. It's huge. The entry, that is. Yes, I checked. It's there, along with lots of other películas español, which are Spanish movies. Okay, it's me again, Johnny. What Jack doesn't know is that that book, Sin Tetas No Hay Paraíso, became such a huge, mega hit all through Latin America that they continuously run that movie and syndicate the soap opera. In Colombia and many Latin countries, it's the highest rated TV series of all time. Remember, this first came out in Colombia 9 years ago now. Wouldn't you know it, NBC and Hollywood have snapped up the rights for an English version. Get this, a New York Magazine article called it an almost unbelievably perfect title for a show. Although it looks like it'll never air because NBC's been getting so much flack. For example, a Dallas Morning News editorial said NBC will be without a shred of dignity if the show ever airs in the U.S. And you know, that's a very rare thing for Hollywood to snap up anything Latin. The only other time that ever happened was with Ugly Betty. Remember that series? And note that Hollywood is certainly the goal of every no-talent actor, actress, producer, screenwriter, director grinding out the usual moronic trash in Latin America. So anyway, what I'm pointing out is Jack has stumbled on a hugely famous TV show and movie, all Colombian and all completely based on boobs, plastic surgery, and narcos. Based on a true story, too. Oh, and by the way, think about this for a second. Expat Eddie says that's how he learned a lot of his Spanish, by watching that TV series. And he's definitely not the only one. He said a few years back when the show was really popular, he'd occasionally pop into one of the famous expat bars in San Salvador. And as usual, he'd run into a lot of expats that were seedy, ragged around the edges, gone native. You know, the usual suspects with a drinking problem. And guess what was on the TV? Nope, not Oprah. By the way, that's reason 2426 why it's a very good idea to relocate to Latin America. No Oprah. Oh sure, like most things first world. She hit the airwaves down here some years back, but she never caught on. No Oprah. What a relief, huh? Anyway, about that famous book and movie we're talking about. I personally know of many, many expat gringos and gringas who've tuned in to that series and show to bone up on their Spanish, too. For some odd reason, American gringa expats are very curious to see that show. Even, perhaps, more than the gringo guys, if that's possible. Okay, now for more of Jack's email. Jack says, now the good things about watching this kind of stuff on YouTube instead of Netflix or cable, if they even offer it, or on Spanish TV are, one, you get to watch it whenever you want. Two, it's free. Three, you can rewind, rewatch, and re-listen to anything if you didn't get it the first time around. And that's a big plus, believe me. Four, you can always find something more interesting than those boring, formulaic, melodramatic telenovelas. The ones you always warn us about, Johnny. So, it's a win-win-win, gringo. And by the way, I'm not an expert on Spanish TV by any means, but one show that I've found on YouTube that I find pretty entertaining is called La Familia Peluche. Okay, let's stop there. It's me again. When Jack says the name of the program is La Familia Peluche, that's a play on words. Because you see, the term peluche in Spanish means a stuffed toy animal. So it's a family of stuffed toy animals. So much for sophisticated Spanish humor. Anyway, Jack goes on to say, at least for me, it's easier to understand television shows than movies. Dumb, borderline slapstick comedy like Peluche are the easiest for me. I think it's because the TV characters enunciate their lines more clearly usually facing the camera, and the plots are simple, ridiculously unbelievably simple, and therefore easy to follow. Anyway, I find Spanish movies are like American movies these days. Everybody seems to mumble a lot, and even when they do speak clearly, half the time you can't hear them. I suppose it's more realistic, but then it's just harder for me to understand. Now, Jack, this is me, Johnny, again. I have to agree with you 100%. I've been down here a long, long time, and there are still movies where I can't understand a thing they say. But that's only with movies that have appeared in the last, let's say, 5 years. Before that, when Latin American movies were really low budget and trashy, with older movies, the actors were such bad performers, so over the top, they just chewed up the scenery so much and over-enunciated everything, just like you said, that it really made it easy for us gringos to understand what they were saying. But unfortunately for me, I could never sit down and watch that stuff for too long because it's just so embarrassingly bad. Anyway, at the risk of sounding like a big pretentious jerk, just remember, you've never seen one of these imbecilic things yourself, have you? Let me just be kind here for a second and say the actors and actresses and media personalities in about 98% of TV and movie productions have all the talent, depth, and intensity of that great internationally famous acting troupe responsible for that unforgettable production, Bozo's Circus. And like I said, I'm being kind here. That said, Jack changes gears in his email. Johnny, on a different subject now, I actually went ahead and wrote that ebook you might remember I joked about doing a while back. Originally, it was going to be about studying Spanish, immersion and otherwise, in Chela, Guatemala, but I kind of expanded it to be about learning your Spanish in general, with an emphasis on Guatemala. Now that my book is done, I'm still working on getting it formatted and uploaded to Amazon Kindle, and as promised, I'll surely send you a free PDF copy as soon as I get the formatting issues resolved. Now, it's got a couple of mentions of you and your seminar, and of course I'm planning on putting up a website for it. Anyway, all the best, Johnny. Hope all's well down there. Signed, Jack Brett. Well, thanks for all that, Jack. And you can be sure when you get that ebook done, I'll let everyone know about it. Because, you know, that's one topic people quiz me on all the time. Everybody wants to know the best ways to learn your Spanish, and they want to know all about those immersion courses down here in Latin America, too. And I know you've done the immersion family personally, and online courses, and you've checked out private Spanish tutors, too. So you really are the expert. Just keep us all posted, okay?
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files. Living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old